How's it going, everyone? It's John Cronshaw, joined today by Critical Mister. This is an artfist.org podcast. We're going to have a little chat about video games today and the debates and issues surrounding them. How's it going?
I'm alright, mate. You alright?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I suppose what we're doing here is we do run an arts website, and to ignore video games as an art form is a bit like being interested in culture and not watching television. It's kind of a bit of a ridiculous state of affairs. So what we want to do today is kind of have a little chat about some of these things and discuss some of the most interesting things about video games today. What kind of games are you playing at the minute, Russ?
I've gone back and I've got the Devil May Cry HD collection because It's just fun, it's just stupid, over the top, ridiculousness, just stupidity, sheer just joy, yeah.
So I've never actually played any of the Devil May Cry games. What are they about?
Well, essentially, the protagonist is Dante, who is a half-demon hunter, who's son of a legendary demon that turned against the demon world and rescued the human world and sealed all the nasty demons away. And he learned how to love. He grew a heart. That old sort of shtick, really.
Right. So the kind of like the vampire who kind of gets a soul almost.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So would you say then that is a good game?
Yes and no. I've always loved it in terms of pure gameplay, because the first Devil May Cry, it really sort of brought things forward in terms of like your third person action adventure with like the mechanics, the combat. I mean, they really are just like, they're combat heavy, and that's where your empowerment comes from. I mean, you're like hefting enemies into the air with a 6-foot sword and then peppering them with bullets to keep them afloat, and you know, you get an array of outlandish weapons and, you know, cover things with electricity and set them on fire. But it's the setting as well that it's so grandiose and ridiculous that it's just a joy. You just, you know, you've got to grin ear to ear as you go from ridiculous situation. You know, you've got giant spiders made out of lava that you're smacking about for the fun of it with a smile on your face, and at no point does your character ever kind of go, "Ooh, this is going to be hard." He's just always like, "Yeah, no problem, whatever." Always a joke, always a smile on his face.
Yeah. So in terms of that game, then, I mean, it's almost like, just sounds to me like pure entertainment.
That's really what it is. It's it doesn't try and be big or clever, and it knows what it is, and it's sort of in that is sort of the beauty of the game. Yeah. It's not trying to be high-minded, and it doesn't really have to be. I mean, that's the point. For something to be good or something to be considered, I don't know, art, as you say, it doesn't have to be big or clever. It just has to be creative and different and maybe take, you know, an original approach to something, but sort of believe in itself as well, you know, within its own context.
So, I mean, in those terms then, what makes a good game, or is that...
Oh, bloody hell. Is it probably easier to say what makes a bad game, really? And a bad game is something that just does not engage the player on the levels. It doesn't. You don't feel rewarded for the effort you put into it. Some games that, again, like Devil May Cry, you can play it on lots of levels. You can simply run about and shoot and enjoy the flashy graphics and the over-the-top action, or you can sort of go to a deeper level in terms of the mechanics of the game, and the more you put into it, the more effort you take to learn how it works, how the combat works, the more you get out of it, because each level is rated, and thus, you know, the less you get hit, the more combos you do, the more stylish you are, the better the game rates you. And if that's important, yeah, then go for it, but if not, it's still a great fun.
So I mean, one thing that is... struck me that kind of sets video games apart from any other medium is that word you use, mechanics. You don't get mechanics in a painting, you don't get mechanics in a novel. I mean, what can you explain to the listeners what you mean by mechanics?
Well, okay, imagine like this. In a painting, you'll say maybe at different styles, you get Renaissance, pre-Raphaelite, postmodern, they all have a sort of criteria, and then by that you can recognise the type of painting. Same in literature, same with cinema or television. But it's the difference between, say, Call of Duty. The mechanics in that are, you're from a first-person perspective, you have a gun, you aim the gun, you shoot people, you move around, there are mechanics within that to make it closer to real life. You can duck behind things, you throw grenades, and these are all worked on to give them a sense of... So they flow, they feel, if not realistic, but natural within themselves.
Yeah.
And where that differs then to, like, Devil May Cry is that it's not realistic at all, but those mechanics have to fit. They all have to be sort of modular to each other, so
having their own kind of internal logic.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And the thing is that, you know, you'll get some games that they've looked at a genre of game and thought, oh, we can do that. And they've done it by the numbers, and in the end, those numbers haven't really added up. Mm. I mean, for instance, there's a game called Wet that was developed by EA, and it's just arbitrary. It's just like, I'm a crazy lady with a gun and a sword, and I'm just going to murder everyone indiscriminately. And there's no charm to it. It is literally a by-the-book sort of... we're hoping you're going to get some thrill out of just killing all these people, and it doesn't... Not the games have to justify themselves, but there has to be, like you said, an internal logic. There has to be some spark within it, some original idea to frame all this around.
Yeah.
But when it is simply just by the books, like, well, we know people like these kind of games, and that there are these social sort of ideas that we know people like get a thrill from, like I say, you know, having a gun, having a sword, killing lots of people, seeming very powerful.
Mm.
And all it does is just simply go, yep, we've got that, tick that, tick that, tick that, tick that. Oh, and it's a female protagonist, so it's not that typical, so we can make her kind of sexy, kind of dangerous, we can give her a tattoo, so ooh, you know what I mean? You don't want to mess with her. Give her a sassy single syllable name like Belle or Death or something, you know. It's just, yeah,
derivative.
Yes, completely derivative.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So I mean, in this term then, it's what fascinates me about the medium is the fact that above anything else, it has developed and evolved, and it's developing and evolving at such a fast pace that it's superseded painting, film in terms of development. What do you think are the weaknesses that we kind of got at the moment with games? Is there anything that's really striking apart from this obvious derivative thing? But you get that in kind of all art forms, don't you? You get derivative painting, you get derivative novels, you get derivative films. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Basically, I'm saying, is there an issue with that development? Does the kind of shift in technology almost make it impossible for game developers to breathe almost and just to kind of survey the landscape? And
well, because,
or is it this constant push that's
because games development has become a decidedly corporate thing. It's all about profit now. It's taken a lot from the sort of the Hollywood model. It has to an extent stifled creativity. There aren't really a lot of allowances. Like in Hollywood, there are still independent studios, there's still a lot of independent films that are made and are still respected. There are festivals and such to sort of, for this underside of films. But there's not a lot of that for games now. So you get giants like...
And you've already mentioned EA.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you get EA who... They've got a terrible habit of swooping in on sequels. They're like, something does well, and then he...
Like FIFA 8, FIFA 9, FIFA 10, 10
FIFA 11, through to X.
Mm.
Yeah. For instance, Dragon Age and Mass Effect, and, you know, you had the...
I didn't think they were by...
Ah, yes, the second games were. The sequels, so they did well. Mm. And then EA went, oh, hello, there's some money in that, and, you know, let's go for that dollar. And so they swoop in, and then, you know... Granted, like, Mass Effect 2 was awesome. Highly well, you know, really well received. That money from EA gave them a great opportunity to spend the time and money and development on making that game and the what it wanted to be. But then you'll get something like Dragon Age 2, which they essentially marginalised it. You can just imagine the scene in the boardroom where they went, right, okay, so the first game, it was a great story, really interestingly written, loads of history and an internal story to it, but what we were kind of thinking is that you can make it a bit more hack and slash, a bit more press a button, hit a bad guy, simplify it, make it more accessible. Now, making something more accessible is great, obviously, because, you get more people to play it, but then sometimes you pay the price of taking away from the game what really made it good in the first place. It essentially went from an RPG, a sort of real-time RPG, akin to Knights of the Old Republic and such, and it became sort of a pale imitation of games like Devil May Cry. And so that's the problem, isn't it? This money is great, but because this money is all based on the market or based on predictions or based on, like, well, is this game going to sell well? It's a bit risky to make it, very specific.
So it's this lowest common denominator, watering it down.
Yes,
for
exactly.
A mass market.
Yeah, and in some times, that's not a problem. That's great. We want more people to play video games. We want people to sort of see how much fun they can be and experience them. But then, what, at the expense of what video games are, really? Which I suppose is a whole other argument, really.
All right, then. So what are video
games? They're interactive entertainment, really, when you boil it down, aren't they? They are. Some of them are highly scripted, where you play these characters and that's your entertainment. It's like, look, get from A to B, do X, Y, and Z in between that, and if you do that, that is your satisfaction by numbers. And then you'll get games that, like, for instance, like Skyrim, where you can finish the main storyline, 10 hours into the game, but that's only roughly 10% of the game, and the rest of it's out there and completely subjective for you to create your own story, for you to create your own person. And I think a lot of that maybe is down to the person and how they experience it. When I played Skyrim, I started off with this notion that I would be, I'm going to be good. I'm going to rescue cats from trees, and I'm going to save the world. And then I found an incredibly powerful Daedric object, and I thought, well, there may be more of these about.
And then so I was seduced by the dark side.
I was literally. I ended up doing terrible, terrible things in my pursuit for power, and instead of feeling conflicted about it, I thought, well, this is my story, this is my character's story. It's like, it's the separation of self and then what you're doing in the game. It's sort of, you're creating a story, but it's still your choices. So it's an interesting sort of two moral levels. There's like, how do you feel as a person? Me, myself, I. So when I was capturing a priest to eat him alive, to get a special ring that allows me to eat corpses and regain my energy, in-game, I was justifying it to myself because I thought, yes, I need this power. I wasn't too comfortable with it as a person because, I don't get many opportunities to eat priests. But it's that separation and it's that escapism that allows you to make these choices. And that's the sort of part of the joy of video games that, like in Devil May Cry or God of War or things like that, when everything is ridiculous and over the top, and that's the joy of it. That's the real sort of the subscribed idea of what you're doing in this game. And then you'll get those games that rely on you, that reflect who you are, and then as you play them, half the fun is thinking, God, I started here, and how the hell did I end up at this point?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've enjoyed Skyrim myself, and it's the experience of playing the game. I mean, you've talked about all the going after the Daedric objects. That's completely different to the way I experience the game, even though essentially it's within the same narrative structure, within the same story, same main story is running through the whole thing, but my experience was very much, I set out from the start to be a bastard. The first town I went to, I mean, it was accidental, actually. The first town I went to, I killed a chicken, and that turned the whole townsfolk against me. And so I thought, right, well, if you're going to go against me, I'll go against you. And then I was a murderer, I was having to hide, I was having to run away from guards all the time. And it's like, this whole experience of, I mean, there was one point where I was chased out of one of the main towns by a bunch of guards, and I was literally fighting for about 2 hours in some woods, just kind of getting rid of all these guards that had chased me out into the fields. And it's like, you know, that's a very, that's, that might happen to other people, but I don't know whether it does. And I really like the element of it that it's, well, my choices of resisting arrest and running off were kind of, you know, kind of made my story and made my narrative and made it more interesting.
It's quite a human response to it as well, in terms that you're like, you know, you're dealing with this and sort of like, oh my God, like the situation you've put yourself in, and you didn't just go, right, oh, I'll pay a fine or I'll go to prison. It's like, no, I don't want to be captured. I don't believe that killing a chicken means this. Whereas with my character, because the route I went, I just became this unassailable evil.
Yeah.
That, like, even if I strolled into a town and murdered everybody, I'd become so powerful by that point that I was quite inhuman, and it made the game a very different experience to me. I was this horrendous supernatural entity roaming the landscape, just doing what I wanted, and, you know, covered head to toe in demonic armor and just like clubbing people to death because I got a bit bored. I even became a werewolf at one point, and if I got tired of just generally being evil and omnipotent, I'd go to a town at night, turn into a werewolf and go on a rampage because I was really going balls deep on this. I am the personification of evil.
See, I never went for any of the werewolf stuff, you know.
Yeah, so exactly.
Whole bits of the story that I just didn't go by, and this is what I find really fascinating. I mean, it was the same with Fallout 3. I don't know if you played that one, and just that game for me was very much changed my opinion on video games. I always saw video games until that point as a form of entertainment in the same way as TV, but that game to me struck me as a piece of art, and it rewarded you, it rewarded curiosity, it rewarded exploration, it rewarded you for kind of making choices that you wouldn't otherwise choose, and it was great. I mean, there were just ridiculous stories. Like one of the ones I really liked was when you went and you were exploring the ruins of Washington DC, and your mission was to kind of find, I think it was the Declaration of Independence.
Oh yes.
And you got into the what was it, the museum, and you're confronted by a Benjamin Franklin,
the robot.
Yeah, a robot who's convinced that he's Benjamin Franklin.
Awesome. And it's kind of sad, isn't it? Because it's like, well, you're only a robot, but
you kind of feel for his delusion.
You do.
It's really odd. And like,
you don't want to rob him of it, do you?
Yeah. And he just feels so. You just feel so bad for him.
Mm.
But then there was another one where.
Well, how did you deal with that situation, though?
What choice did
you make in the end?
I think I just took it and I tricked him into giving me the thing.
Right.
Got him to kind of reprogram himself and use a logic loop on him.
Right. I blew his head off.
That's not very nice. But I made him realise that giving me the thing was what Benjamin Franklin does want.
Yes.
You know. So, but another one was the what was it? You stumble across this town. Well, it's not really a town. It's a little settlement that's on a like a broken like it's a caved in motorway, and these people live on top of this motorway.
Yes.
Arafu.
Yes.
I think it's
yes.
called. And it's all a bit sinister, and you realise that one of the kids who live there has gone missing, and then it's your mission to kind of track him down. But then you stumble across this horde of vampires living in these train tunnels and stuff, and you think, oh, well,
they're vampires.
Vampires, so,
yeah.
Thus bastards. But actually, you realise, you kind of get into conversation with them, and they're more like, well, you know, we are vampires, but we provide a home for people who were outcast by their thing. And you had this real kind of moral dilemma about whether to bring this kid back to his family and stuff. And I just thought that kind of thing, it wasn't a simple, like, I played Fable 3, I think it was, the Christmas before last.
Yeah.
And just the moral choices are like, should you do something good or should you do something bad?
The Fable games are like a pantomime, really, about morality, aren't they?
Yeah.
Sort of mock English ye olde. My lord, governor, would you go save my daughter from the evil castle?
Yeah. Or it's like, oh, you could put her into slavery, it's your choice.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing I found about this Arafu thing was, I was genuinely conflicted. It was like, well, you know, you were weighing it up and you're like, well, you know, this group calling themselves a family, they provide this home for these people, and there wasn't just a choice of a good and bad way. There were literally a whole spectre of different options and different ways of dealing with it. And I just thought, in terms of, there's no narrative structure like that in films, in books, and I just thought that that was really quite amazing.
It creates an interesting moral context for the game as well, because when civilization, you know, in speech marks, has sort of ended, and all the sort of the social norms have gone away, what's right and what's wrong? And yeah, it's sort of, I mean, I remember in that situation, I ended up managing to broker some kind of peace between them, where the family would protect Arafu.
Mm.
And it's sort of like, when I first started that quest, I was like, well, I'm going to go kill the vampires now. I'm going to go search for them, go down into the dark, dingy train tunnels, and then, like, you realise they've actually made a home for themselves there, some semblance of life. And they have a sort of religion as well, and they have a kind of sort of some morality based around...
Yeah, they have a very deep moral code. They have a deep moral code. They're about protecting things, and it's really... This is the thing, it wasn't just cut and dry, these are vampire bastards, go kill them.
It's sort of like Frankenstein's monster, like... You know, the monster was a monster, but only by virtue of what created it. And then you've got the ignorant villagers wanting to burn it and kill it with pitchforks and stuff. And that was a similar situation, because the people in Arafu were, well, hicks, really, weren't they? They were just, like, living on the very edge of civilization on this broken overpass. And somebody disappears and they go, the monsters did it! Kill the monsters! We'll give you a chicken bone! Please do it! And then, and sort of, I kind of fell on the side of the family, because they seemed more civilized and intelligent and sort of morally grounded than these people.
Mm. And it was like there was a point in the game where the game map is huge.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
You spend literally hours exploring different little quirks and different little things, and I decided to try and get to an extreme of a map. I think it was, I went to the bottom left corner, something like that. Got right there, and there was a rock, and it just said "fuck you" on it. I was just like, "Yeah, thanks for that."
Yes, I know what you mean.
So all the way through, there's just little humour, and it kind of almost rewards you, and at the same time, sticks its fingers up at you.
I think one of the difficult things with games is when you are reminded that it's a game.
Mm.
You know, the idea of immersion, like with a book, a book doesn't stop and say, tell me what happened in that last chapter, what did you think of it, what were the underlying messages there, and then if you haven't picked up on that, it doesn't say, well, you're gonna have to read that chapter again.
That's it. And this kind of almost goes to another point about game mechanics and things like that, is you don't pick up a book and it doesn't tell you how to read this particular book.
Yeah.
You don't have the first chapter, which is a tutorial on how to deal
these
with this
verbs,
text.
These are nouns.
So it's
like,
well, you're reading an Anne Rhine book. Here's a history of objectivism, you know. Just to kind of give it some context. And, you need to... It's a Kurt Vonnegut book. Why not read it with your tongue in your cheek and make sure you understand that it's ironic and, you know, it's meant to be funny and... Yeah, you see what I mean? It's like the tutorial thing is often really contrived, and that's something I find a bit annoying. I mean, going back to Fallout 3, they did it wonderfully with the...
You are born.
Yeah, you're born, and then... Although, again, it goes, like, another problem is often with games is the quality of things like narrative, characterisation. Mm. In novels, characterisation is a lot more complicated than... certain stats that are about how tough you are, how good, how charismatic you are, how, you know what I mean? It's like they whittle down character to algorithms a lot of the time in games, which I don't like. And I want it to be more fluid than that. Like, I kind of like the way they do it in Skyrim.
The more you do of any one thing, the more adept at it you become. It's like a more natural progress.
Yeah, but again, I would like to be unaware of those stats.
Yeah, but people like stats as well, though, don't they?
Yeah.
They want to go to their mates and go, oh, my armour rating's 426. What's yours? And it's that water cooler, my football team beat your football team, or... You know, I think you need...
Okay, so you could know how strong your armour is.
Yeah.
But why do you need to know how charismatic you are out of 100?
That's a good point, because you're either going to... fail it, or you're not going to fail it.
And, like, your character might suddenly, throughout the game, be a bit more... You know what I mean? Like, these stats could naturally go up. You might become naturally stronger.
Mm.
And they could be a background rather than, right, what are you going to increase this level? Well, I want to increase my strength by 2 points.
But a lot of it is also, I mean, it's part of, like, for instance, in Skyrim, you'll say, like, oh, I need speech of 50 to get this certain perk. So you need some idea of progress to realise when this is available to you.
Well, they could have just done it where these are the perks available. Like, in Fallout 3, they blank the perks out that aren't available to you at that time.
True, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't really get... Like, they're just kind of highlighted what you can pick as a perk, and they could have done something like that. Mm. That would have been nicer, but again, it still doesn't... It's almost like the characterisation is unnecessary in that respect, because you're the character, and in that sense, it's not like it's going into... It's not like it's a narrative as such. I mean, what is a story that's not being told by someone? It's life, isn't it?
True.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's
So it's a weird space. Mm. Like, video games do occupy this weird space, and I think it's really exciting and also really mundane.